as well as subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like this program, we encourage you to rate and review it on iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud. We just want to party, party just for you. We just want to party, party just for you.
Malcolm Ross of Joseph K. You're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Are you looking for a child development program for your preschooler? Columbia Opportunities Head Start offers full-day early childhood development activities and support to eligible 3- and 4-year-olds throughout Columbia County at no cost to families. School readiness, health, nutrition, and parent engagement activities are offered throughout the year. Head Start classrooms are located in Hudson, Philmont, Taconic Hills, Volusia, and Chatham. Give your child a head start. For more information, 518-828-6312 or columbiaopportunities.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers, and doubters.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
You've tuned in to All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews. Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
The Public News Service daily newscast for Friday, November the 23rd, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. President Donald Trump goes off script in a Thanksgiving call to the troops. Also on the Friday rundown, a new law expands prescription assistance in Pennsylvania, and a pair of reports on the main events, Black Friday and Small Business Saturday. Topping our news, President Donald Trump went off the script on a Thanksgiving Day call with members of the military. The Huffington Post reporting he tore into the federal judiciary, the caravan of migrants approaching the southern U.S. border, and the controversy surrounding the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. The Post reports, in the call, Trump continued to rail against Monday's decision by a U.S. District Court judge blocking his ban on refugees seeking asylum outside legal entry points of entry along the border. Trump broke with the practice of past presidents by using the traditional holiday teleconference call to troops in various parts of the world to vent on political issues. In his comments in Thursday's call on Khashoggi, the U.S.-based Saudi Arabian writer who was killed last month upon entering the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, Trump said maybe the world should be held accountable for his death because the world is a vicious place. The state of Pennsylvania now helping more low-income seniors afford prescription medications that they need.
In the final days of this year's legislative session, lawmakers unanimously approved HB 270, raising the maximum income limits of the PACENET program for the first time in 15 years. According to Bill Johnston Walsh, state director of AARP Pennsylvania, the law means individuals 65 and older with annual incomes up to $27,500 and couples up to $35,500 now qualify for the program.
It's great news for older Pennsylvanians who need help paying for prescription drugs, and we all know how hard that is these days. A lot of people are choosing between paying for their prescription drugs or putting food on the table or paying for the utilities.
The raised limit means an additional 17,000 Pennsylvanians now qualify for PACENET's low-cost prescription program. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
For additional information, folks can call the Department of Aging at 800-225-7223. Advocates for immigrants say changes to the definition of public charge, a term used to issue green cards and permanent status, has given access to public services a bad rap. Antoinette Kerr explains.
The changes would affect policies that govern how the use of public benefits may affect individuals' ability to obtain a green card. Kate Woomer Dieters, senior attorney at the North Carolina Justice Center, explains the impact for close to 400,000 people living here legally.
And then there are people who live in immigrant households who may be indirectly impacted because somebody else in their household is not able to obtain a green card, or because their family members drop themselves out or their children out of public benefits due to fear and confusion over the rule.
A report from the North Carolina Justice Center says more than 170,000 children live in a family with at least one non-citizen. This is Antoinette Kerr reporting.
Experts say the proposed public charge would contribute to more uninsured and negatively affect the healthy development of children. To comment on the proposal, you can go to federalregister.gov. Today's Black Friday, but if you prefer to spend your money on your community's main street, you can shop tomorrow on Small Business Saturday.
The shopping event was initiated in 2010, just about the time chain stores, e-commerce giants such as Amazon and big box brands seemed poised to overwhelm local merchants competing against them. Anthony Melandra with the National Federation of Independent Business reminds holiday shoppers that local merchants also employ local people.
Small Business Saturday is important because it serves as a great reminder that America's economic engine is on Main Street. Small businesses make up the vast majority of all business.
Iowa has almost 244,000 independent businesses run by everyday citizens. In 2017, Iowans most often visited a restaurant, bar, or pub on Small Business Saturday, while their neighbors in Minnesota were more likely to visit a pet store, according to an NFIB survey. I'm Roz Brown.
According to data from the U.S. Small Business Administration, small businesses account for 48% of the nation's employment. And finally, Suzanne Potter tells us about 20% of all online sales for 2018 expected to take place in the next few days. So consumer groups have tips to protect yourself from the scams over Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday, and even Giving Tuesday.
Last year, Americans spent more than $6.5 billion on the Monday after Thanksgiving alone. Timothy Johnston with the Better Business Bureau of Nevada says if you're going to give out personal information online, like your credit card number, there are certain clues that indicate the site is more secure.
Make sure it is HTTPS and also has that little lock icon in your web browser to make sure that the transaction is being encrypted. Also, shop with a credit card because if there happens to be any issues, the credit card typically provides a bit more protection for you as a consumer than, say, a debit card that's linked to your bank account.
Experts say it's important to read the site's return policy, which may change during the holidays or vary from types of items within the same website. You can check out any online business before you shop by looking at their rating on BBB.org. I'm Suzanne Potter.
Johnson also advises people to be wary of sites that try to manipulate you with emotional appeals and of people who ask for in-person and on-the-spot donations. I'm Mike Clifford. Have a great weekend. Thanks for newsing and cruising with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News. I'm Philip Grant. Kirsten Palpini reports in the Berkshire Eagle that a store in Northampton, Massachusetts began selling legal marijuana at 8:30 a.m. November 20th. The New England Treatment Access Shop was one of two spots in the state to begin sales, while others wait to be approved. In the Berkshires, 8 stores are awaiting approval by the Cannabis Control Commission. 4 have received provisional approval and are waiting for their final licenses. Massachusetts first voted to legalize medical marijuana in 2012 and then voted to legalize recreational pot in 2016. New York currently has one of the nation's most restrictive medical marijuana laws in the country. Read the full story in the Berkshire Eagle. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation announced November 20th grant awards totaling $902,888 for 24 Hudson River estuaries. DEC Commissioner Basil Sago said, and I quote, "The Hudson River is a vital part of New York's identity and one of our defining natural assets. With the state's steadfast support and investment, many riverfront communities are pursuing projects that advance stewardship of their natural resources, such as sustainable shoreline techniques, source water protection, and green infrastructure planning. These grant awards build on local conservation efforts and priorities by advancing new possibilities for nature-based tourism and its associated economic benefits," end quote. The grants include $39,984 for Columbia Land Conservancy Incorporated for an education program at the Greenport Conservation Area, $49,855 for Trout Unlimited Incorporated for culvert replacement in the town of Taconic, $50,000 for a riverfront park in Rensselaer County's village of Castleton-on-the-Hudson, $27,750 for an education program from Poughkeepsie Highland Railroad Bridge Company Incorporated on the walkway over the Hudson, $50,000 for Riverkeeper Incorporated for Wallkill River water quality improvements, $37,000 for the Hudson River Sloop Clearwater for an education program in Newburgh and Kingston, $49,285 for the villages of Piermont and Catskill and the city of Kingston for a flood resilience project, $50,000 for the town of Esopus to strengthen the Esopus shoreline and regional trails, and $40,000 for the Hudson River Maritime Museum for a climate change education project. Find out more on the DEC's website. The Albany Times Union reports that someone shot several rounds into the Pop's Place restaurant on Route 145 in Preston Hollow November 18th. The diner was closed when it was shot up and is now riddled with bullet holes. Albany County Sheriff Craig Apple said no one was injured and no one has been arrested. Read the full story in the Times Union. Thomas Beaumont reports for the Associated Press, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, and I quote, has contacted Des Moines area Democrats, end quote, about a possible presidential campaign. Iowa holds the first caucus in 2020 to decide the Democratic nominee. On November 21st, Cuomo dismissed talk of any presidential ambition, saying, and I quote, I am going to stick with New York State, end quote. Previously, New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand said she is considering a run for president, too. Read the full story on the Associated Press website. Sarah Tapton reports for Columbia Green Media that the Cosmic Cinema Movie Theater opened November 19th with showings of Windows, A Fantastic Beast, The Crimes of Grindelwald, and Instant Family. The movie theater sells food and alcohol, at 160 Fairview Avenue in Greenport in the former Fairview Cinema 3 and Angela's Pizza and Pasta locations. Owner Terrell Barley was the founder, CEO, and chairman of Cinebar, a similar theater. He is also CEO of Alamo Drafthouse Cinemas and has plans for more Cosmic Cinemas in Albany at the former Madison Theater and in other locations around the country. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News. The local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Graham. Have a good day and a happy and healthy Thanksgiving.
WGXC has new program changes coming December 1st, and we have a place for you on your local airwaves. Are you a musical expert with deep knowledge in an underrepresented genre? Do you have something to say about politics in the Hudson Valley or want to help your neighbors tell their stories on the air? Go to WGXC.org and click on the volunteer page to fill out an application and get on the air at 90.7 FM.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to Stars and Stripes. Listen to Texas. Listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeples. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio, WGXC.
WGXC has new program changes coming December 1st, and we have a place for you on your local airwaves. Are you a musical expert with deep knowledge in an underrepresented genre? Do you have something to say about politics in the Hudson Valley or want to help your neighbors tell their stories on the air? Go to WGXC.org and click on the volunteer page to fill out an application and get on the air at 90.7 FM.
Next, we have these reports.
Welcome to WGXC's At Issue. I'm your host, John Kane. I'm here with Rebecca Wolf today of Hudson, New York. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you.
And we're going to talk about housing today and some of the various challenges we're facing here in Hudson. With housing. Rebecca, you got involved in housing through Affordable Housing Hudson, mm-hmm. Which I was also involved in. Can you tell us a little bit about that organization?
Sure. That got started. It was an effort to address some of the obviously growing concerns of the city. It was a decision to bring people together. That's really what the meaning of that group was to create a public face for the concern and to create basically, sometimes I like to think of Affordable Housing Hudson as a mailing list of people who are concerned and who came out to the first events that we did. We had three public forums. It was in, I believe, 2017 that we had these public forums.
Time last week seems like last year, but yeah, I know, time seems to be dilating.
Well, you know, everything in 2017 has been...
It's 2018.
I'm sorry, that's right. See, 2017 was rough, then 2018. Anyways,
don't worry, guys, we're not going to talk about too many numbers today.
No, hardly any at all. But Affordable Housing Hudson, I know for a fact we had three public forums that each addressed different concerns around housing specific to Hudson, and we had a a bunch of different like you could call them experts in housing. We had the first one was people who deal with actual literal affordable housing, real estate development, and then the next one. What did we have? You were there. It was.
I know we did short-term rentals.
Well, that was the third one, which sort of segues into what I think we're going to talk about today. Our second one, I can't remember, but we had people from Galvin Foundation. We had people from Habitat for Humanity. And then the third one was about the issue of short-term rentals in Hudson.
Right. And while that seems to be on a lot of people's minds, it's certainly not the only issue that we're dealing with when we talk about housing in
Hudson.
Absolutely
not.
And I think just from my experience, knowing it, you know, I told you I'm shopping for a new apartment right now. Housing seems to be the number one issue that I think Hudson is facing. The shortage of housing, or rather, if not the shortage, the dearth of available housing as we go into 2019.
Right. And I mean, it's, you know, when you talk about housing, it's always a sliding signifier, if you will, because, you know, what's affordable to some, like whenever you talk about affordable housing, for example, the question arises immediately. Well, what do you mean affordable housing?
Yeah, and affordable to whom?
Exactly.
Because the area median income has not really gone up.
Right. And the truth is there's some really specific answers, and I hope that we can get to a place in the conversation where we no longer have to ask that over and over. Like,
right.
Affordable with a capital A has really specific percentages of income that apply to it. Then there's the concept of how do we keep housing affordable for workforce people, which is the lowercase a.
Right.
Like, how do we keep housing affordable for people who are not super resource.
Right. Because if an employer wants to move up and open up an office here from Brooklyn, you know, probably one of the attractions of opening up an upstate office is that they can pay their employees a little bit less, but their employees will still enjoy a better lifestyle because housing costs are lower, transportation costs are lower, and, you know, they can put a little bit of money away. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that could be attractive to employers. But right now,
right.
You know, and then rents are kind of on par with Brooklyn.
Well, totally. And then there's the fact that Hudson, I mean, the problems specific to Hudson that are, I think, remarkable are that, you know, it's a hierarchy of needs situation. Like, you have people living in Hudson who are truly lower income and, you know, and who rely on subsidized housing and capital A affordable housing to make their lives workable. Then you have a lot of people who have been loving living in Hudson because it was affordable lowercase a and meant that they could be artists. They could be, living in a way that where they were maybe producing amazing food for people or, you know, making amazing, crafts and things and living a less stressful life. Right. Now, what you have going on is what happens in gentrifying communities, which is that but it's in because of the size of Hudson and it's so condensed and it's so concentrated. It's like a microcosm of gentrification. You have this thing happening where the consumers of these amazing, beautiful goods are all buying up the properties that formerly were occupied by the producers.
Right.
And so, yeah, so...
And
right.
I mean, that's a larger conversation that's going to happen, I think, everywhere. I don't know that there's a very simple solution to that.
No, there's. I don't think there's any simple solution.
I moved
solutions.
Up from New York
there's
City several
different...
years ago. You know, the rent was one of the factors that really attracted me to Hudson.
Sure.
You know, it's certainly not the case anymore, but I'm not an evil person.
No, I'm not saying you're evil, John. Don't feel defensive.
Well, no. And no, but, you know, I don't think, you know, there is this idea that these city people are coming up and popping up, you know, they're snapping up all the properties and there's nothing we can really do.
Well, that's not true. But I mean, I think that there's micro things that people do that change situations. And so to say, like, there's nothing we can do is not true.
Well, not to stop people from buying properties.
No, of course, you can't literally, like, lie down in front of a building and say, you know, you may not purchase this building.
Right, because those people were also chased out of Brooklyn by somebody who moved in with more money.
Well, so that's what, a while ago when I was first becoming a landlord in Hudson, which I want to really openly say I am.
Get off my show.
Ha, ha, ha. No, I'm the right person to be sitting on your show.
Right.
But so when I decided to be a landlord in Hudson, I was, you know, having a lot of conscience crises about it, which I'd already been having just basically living in Hudson and watching the process go on. Mm-hmm. I realized at a certain point, it's not a, you know, there are like gradations of bad behavior as a gentrifier. And some people, like, to say that anyone, you know, anyone who moves to a place and, like, takes advantage of the fact that they can afford the rent there, like moving to a place from another place, you know, is a terrible person, that's not possible. You can't say that. But what you can say is that somebody who essentially is a real estate developer who from afar, however afar, whether
or a speculator, if not an
or a speculator, you know, and on whatever scale. Like, I'm talking also about somebody who lives in, say, you know, Germantown, for example, and looks on realtor.com and sees, oh, there's a building in Hudson that I could buy for cheap and then I could turn it into, for example, a short-term rental. That person is not being a good actor.
Right.
In my humble opinion. However, and that's, I mean, for me, from my somewhat single-minded perspective, that is where we can do things. And so, you know, and then I guess just to continue that line of thought for a second, even farther away, like somebody from the city who has no community goals, shall we say. You got no community goals. Your goal is to make some money. That's something that we should.
I mean, it's a laudable goal. I understand people are, you know, they're saving for their retirement. At the same time,
you know,
we have to balance out. Just because you're saving for your retirement just doesn't mean the community has to see itself torn asunder.
That's right. It doesn't.
Right. And that doesn't mean that you're doing a bad thing, but neither is the community.
Well, actually, I think that it's fair to say, in a certain sense, you are doing a bad thing. I mean, people have to at some point, like, accept that their actions may not be totally without consequences, or that the consequences of their actions may not balance out in the book of good and evil, you know?
So let's talk about affordable housing.
Okay.
And break it down just a little bit.
Sure.
And let's start by talking about Airbnb, which I think is probably, or short-term rentals in general, the shorthand that I'm using for that is Airbnb.
Okay.
Because there are, of course, other companies that do the same thing. So, you know, we have a fairly booming tourist economy right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of weddings in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
These are really important to a lot of people in Hudson right now. I'm a bartender. You know, during the summer, on the weekends, this area is bustling with tourists. And we don't have enough hotel rooms right now to accommodate all of those visitors.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, you know, having some of that extra housing stock taken over so that we can accommodate those visitors, they can come here and spend money and produce sales tax revenue and produce, you know, for me, tips. That can be really important for where we are right now. I think that that's... that is at least, if it's not fair to say, that is at least the reality of the situation right now.
Yeah. My perspective on that, which comes from, you know, a wealth of personal experience in tourism economies and like living in resort towns and working in restaurants and making my living off of tourists at times, cleaning houses, tending bar, bussing tables, et cetera, et cetera. My perspective is, how important is it?
Well,
you know, because I would basically assert that, you know, everybody needs to make a living. Everybody needs to be able to make a living. To say somehow that, like,
imagine me and you, I do. I think about you day and night. It's only right to think about the girl you love and hold her tight. So happy together. If I should call you up, invest a dime, and you say you belong to me and ease my mind, imagine how the world would be. So very fine, so happy together.
I'm Jack Ross Pilkington, and you are listening to WGXC 90.7 Acre and Hudson, listener-supported hands-on radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
Underwriting support on WGXE is provided by Basilica Hudson, located in Hudson, New York, presenting Basilica Farm and Flea Holiday Market Thanksgiving weekend, featuring farm-to-table food, vintage items, and handmade goods. More than 100 vendors and other community partners. All day, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, November 23rd through 25th. Information at basilicahudson.org. Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
Next, we have these reports.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking with Blair Horner, Executive Director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. For 33 years, NYPIRG has put out an annual survey of dangerous toys that parents should be mindful of during the holiday season. Blair, what are some of the toys that top your watch list this year?
Well, we do this every year because we want to make sure that adults in particular think about the kinds of toys that they purchase for children. Sometimes the toys that are being purchased are not being done by the parents themselves, and so they may not know about a potential toy being a choking hazard. We looked at balloons, for example, that where the warning labels were not clear about who could use them and who couldn't. In addition to that, there were some toys, slime toys in particular, that had very high levels of boron in them. And boron, if ingested, you know, at low levels, won't do anything to harm you, but it could at higher levels make you sick. There's no limits on that in the United States. In Europe, there are limits on toys that contain boron. And the toys that we found were tested at levels that were 15 times the allowable amount in Europe. We also found toys that had exceedingly high sound noise levels particularly for children. One in particular that we looked at was a sort of a jet plane type thing that little kids would have next to their ears to fly it around, and it consistently exceeded the 85 decibel maximum that children should be exposed to. And we found increasingly online toys, sort of smart toys that react to the child or adult, the information that is collected either through filing the information about for warranties, et cetera, or from the use of it themselves, the information can be sold to third-party marketers. And so you put all those things together, privacy issues for the children, unnecessary exposure to toxins, noise levels or choking hazards. Those were the kinds of toys that we found that we think consumers should be aware of.
So one of the ones you reference is the slime. Now, is that a particular brand? And when you mentioned boron as being something that parents should be concerned of, but, you know, what is boron typically used for?
Well, boron can be used in, it's also a component used in borax, and that can be used as a cleaning material. The reason they use it in toys, it supposedly increases the stickiness of it, but from our understanding is that any other chemicals could be used as well. It doesn't have to be boron. And the concern is that in the case of the toy, the additional stickiness means that you can get some of that on your hands or whatever, and little kids like to put their hands in their mouths, and you could end up ingesting boron and conceivably could have it exposed enough where it could make you sick. But there was no particular we looked at particular toys. Whether or not it's in all slime toys or not, we don't know. Only the ones that we looked at registered at the excessive levels that we identified that exceeded what the Europeans would allow.
So I noticed that one of the toys on display at your press conference was a robot toy. Is that one of the toys you're concerned about in terms of information going back to the seller?
Yes. I mean, that particular toy is called Dash. It's a little robot that's voice activated. And again, we're not anti-technology in terms of kids being, we live in a high-tech world and it's going to increasingly become more technological. But the question of privacy is a real issue. And we don't think that, you know, marketers should be able to get easy access to information about children. It's bad enough when adults do it because they're not paying attention. But at least as an adult, you have the capabilities of figuring that stuff out. When it comes to children, we don't think that information should be marketed to third parties.
Now, you said NIPER's been doing this for 33 years. So when you identify these products as being unsafe or raising other consumer concerns, what has been the response both of the government but also the manufacturers that are producing such toys?
Well, you know, it's, of course, all over the place. There have been 150 toys that have been recalled as a result of these surveys over the 33 years. And so there's some positive reactions from the government itself, particularly the Consumer Product Safety Commission. Manufacturers sometimes will react. One thing that we noticed when we did the survey was that online sellers are more likely not to have warning labels on them, or you have to scroll down the page to see them, which you wouldn't see if a toy's on a shelf. One of the things to look out for is online purchases, Amazon in particular, is if you are just looking for the product and then clicking on it to buy it, you may be missing out important warnings. And so it may well be that this round of our survey will have an impact on players like Amazon and Walmart who sell a lot of toys online.
So if parents are concerned about some of these type of issues, you know, what type of self-protection can they take?
Well, parents, adults, anybody looking at buying toys for kids could go to toysafetystips.com, toysafetytips.org, and get information on how to shop smart for toys for their children.
And over the years, what have been some of the most, egregious toys that you've come across?
Well, the ones that are really the scariest are the kinds of toys that where they're real choking hazards. And it's not always just the toy itself. Like the balloon is the classic thing where you see children are inhaling the balloon when they're trying to blow it up, where they somehow chew on it and swallow it, and they choke. And it's one of the leading causes of choking deaths in the country for children are balloons. And that's sort of like, in some ways, a primitive product that has been around forever, and it still causes damage. But other toys where the parts themselves can be too small for a child, and it's just a part of the toy. So one of the things we showed today at our news conference was that if you take a toilet roll and you look at the size of that, if the toy can fit inside that, it's a choking hazard for children. And it's really those everyday toys that people don't think about that are the ones that are the most egregious because they cause the most damage.
So we're now going to hear the noise from one of these jet airplanes.
The kids are holding it next to their ear because they have little arms. This is what they're being exposed to.
So don't be putting that under the holiday tree this year. And people want more information on your website, NYPIRG.org?
The report's listed on NYPIRG.org. And again, the ToySafetyTips.org website is where consumers can go to shop to get tips on how to shop smart.
And this has been Blair Horner for the New York Public Interest Research Group, and this is Mark Dunley for WOOC.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
I'm Tom Rowe in the WGXC newsroom with the news at wgxc.org. You can go there to find out more about anything you hear here. Dan Friedman reports in the Albany Times-Union that Representative John Faso says that what Donald Trump said about the murder of an American journalist was, quote, better left unsaid, unquote. Quote, maybe he did and maybe he didn't, unquote, Trump said November 20th about whether Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia ordered the killing of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. Faso says the president, quote, unnecessarily downplays the likely involvement of Saudi leadership in this appalling crime. As such, much of his statement would have been better left unsaid, unquote. But Faso, a Republican from Kinderhook, said the United States, quote, has strategic reasons to stay involved diplomatically and militarily with Saudi Arabia. The murder of Mr. Khashoggi has, however, altered our relationship for the foreseeable future, unquote. Representative-elect Antonio Delgado had a much stronger assessment, quote, remaining a moral leader on the world stage and true to our commitment to advancing democracy requires a foreign policy grounded in our values, unquote, Delgado wrote on Twitter. Quote, the current approach appears purely transactional and devoid of respect for basic human rights. Simply put, it is un-American, unquote. Read the full story in the Albany Times-Union. Columbia Green Media reports that a passenger Amtrak train headed south had several cars decouple while traveling through Stuyvesant November 21st. No one was injured and passengers were transferred to a different train. New York State Police are investigating. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Rick Carlin reports for Capital Confidential that Talk 1300 host Fred Dicker is off the air for now. Station operator Paul Vanderberg said the host is dealing with an illness that has struck someone close to him. Quote, he'll be back in some capacity, unquote, although not hosting another hour-long show like the one he stopped hosting at 10 a.m. weekdays, said Vanderberg. Dicker, a conservative, has been on the air and in the Capital area since 1997, but lately has been hosting the Albany-based show from Florida often. Read the full story at Capital Confidential, a Times Union blog. The Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood will open a new health center in Hudson in January with medical services, care coordination and counseling offices, and a shared teen space and community room. The group is moving from 190 Fairview Avenue, where there are often protests, to 802 Columbia Street. The group is in the middle of a fundraising campaign with $4.2 million of its $7.2 million goal raised. The Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood Center provides contraceptive care, abortion, STI testing and treatment, and transgender care. Quote, UHPP is committed to providing a place where patients feel valued and respected and to provide the best care, no matter what. We have been working quietly in the community and met with numerous supporters, and the response has been incredible. Due to the overwhelming generosity of our initial campaign and the new and looming attacks on abortion access, UHPP has decided to raise our goal to $7.2 million. This will allow us to establish a $5 million health care access fund to ensure that our health care services delivery is uninterrupted for all our patients and for all services, unquote. Shelley Hagan, UHPP president and CEO, said, Hagan will be a guest on the WGXC Morning Show November 27th to discuss the fundraising and new center.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org, including some of these events.
Friday, if you're looking for a job, there's a job search help at the Hudson Area Library at 10 a.m. 51 North 5th Street is where the Hudson Area Library is. Friday night, Steely Dinn performs at High Low. That's PT6 on the harp and Slink Moss on the steel drum. And there'll be a live web stream at WGXC.org. Click on Listen Now and scroll down to find the live web stream from High Low in Catskill, 365 Main Street. Steely Dinn performs Friday night around 8 p.m. Turn out or tune in. Saturday, November 24th, Ankrum Opera House has its holiday open house with hors d'oeuvres from Chaseholm Farm, Crossroads Food Store, Green Acres Farm, the Hudson Chatham Winery, and the Miracle Springs Farm. That's from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Ankrum Opera House. Sunday, November 25th, Pamela Badilla tells folk tales and stories at the Hudson Area Library at 2 p.m. Monday, November 26th, The Music of Albert Eiler is at Tubby's in Kingston. The new, it's an old spot, but now they're playing more experimental music. Mars Williams from the Psychedelic Furs leads a band of his friends playing the music of Albert Eiler and also some Christmas music. Let's see, it's Mars Williams on sax and toy instruments, Steve Swells playing trombone, Don Davis on alto sax, Ted Orr on guitar, and Steve Rust on bass. The legendary Chris Corsano is on drums, Monday, November 26th at Tubby's in Kingston, 8:30 p.m. These events and more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org. Remember, you can add an event there, too. If you got a community event, a fundraiser for your church, nonprofit group, a lecture you're putting on, your band is playing a show, make sure it gets listed and read on the radio. Go to WGXC.org, click on the community calendar, and then add an event. You can copy and paste the information in. Soon, folks like me will read it on the radio. Folks around the world will read it, see it online at WGXC.org. Here's the
next, it's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day, a performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Here's Hudson Valley legendary composer Pauline Oliveros with Sound Geometries for Chamber Orchestra.
Nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur, or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
Listening to WJFC Acra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
I'm a rogue.